The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Reader's Digest. Our first article is from the Reader's Digest National Interest column, Filling in for Family. When families fracture, surrogate grandparents can fulfill essential roles for love and support. By Lexi Pandell from Wired Magazine. Karen Totches Malinek watches her herd of 20 goats from the kitchen window as she waits for her family to arrive. It's a clear summer day in Independence, Minnesota, population 3,644, half an hour outside Minneapolis, where she lives with her husband, Dave Malinek. She holds a pink coffee mug in her hands. Moms make everything better, it reads. Karen's life revolves around her farm, which is also the home base for her goat's milk soap business, Rafa Farms. As we lean against her cluttered kitchen counter, Karen tucks her bobbed silver hair behind an ear and checks the time. They should be here soon, she says, her vowels drawn out by her native Minnesota accent. I'm due to meet each of Karen's four daughters, four sons-in-law, and 12 grandchildren over the next 2 days. Karen and Dave only recently moved to this farm. Because their workshop remains under construction, the soap making happens wherever there's space. The living room is filled with racks of finished bars labeled by scent, tea tree, lilac, lemongrass. Silicon molds cover a long table, and vats of essential oils line the walls. The small kitchen is stacked high with hand blenders. There is no room for furniture, hardly space to walk. Where, then, to put the family who will soon arrive? As if on cue, Karen's daughter Michelle, along with her husband and two sons, pulls in. The boys, ages 9 and 7, hop out of the car and hand over gifts, a jigsaw puzzle for Dave and a handmade condolence card for Karen, as the day before Karen had to put down Angel, her elderly Maltese. Karen pins the card to her refrigerator beneath a photo of three other grandsons, boys whom Michelle, her husband, and her sons have never met. That's because Michelle and her brood aren't exactly Karen's real family. Karen adopted them as a surrogate grandmother in the lonely years after her biological daughters turned her away. Karen and Michelle met in November 2023 on a Facebook group called Surrogate Grandparents USA, where older and younger Americans connect over a mutual need for family. Many of the posts read like tiny, tragic personal ads. We want grandparents who want to have pizza nights with us, attend baseball and basketball games, have ice cream dates, take bike rides, just genuinely have fun with us and our boys. My children need more than just me to love them. I can't be their mama, daddy, aunt, uncle, grandma, and grandpa forever. We joke about it, but it's true, and it sits as a pit in my stomach. One lonely grandma here. I would love to share affection and attention with a nearby family. Donna Scora, a retired paralegal from Summerfield, Florida, created Surrogate Grandparents USA in 2015. Everybody needs some kind of support system, emotionally, she says. Some members have lost loved ones, while others have never had families of their own. But what the group really represents, Scora says, is a refuge for the estranged. I realized it was a growing problem, not only in the United States, but worldwide. Scrolling through the messages only confirms this. Many of the posters report being the victims, or initiators, of estrangement. Today, around 27% of American adults have cut off contact with a family member, one of the highest estrangement rates in the world. and it seems to be on the rise, according to Joshua Coleman, Ph.D., author of the book Rules of Estrangement, Why Adult Children Cut Ties and How to Heal the Conflict. Online support groups, Instagram influencers, TikTok influencers, Coleman says, are all huge contributors to this phenomenon. While estrangement has always existed, abuse and divorce are common causes, as are disagreements over money, religion, sexual orientation, and politics, never before was it characterized as a pathway to personal growth and identity the way it is today, he says. Surrogate Grandparents USA attracted a mere 30 members in its first 6 months. The group was only as useful as its size. The more members, the easier it would be to find matches. So Scora posted dozens of free ads and contacted local TV stations. By 2019, the group had 3,700 members. Today, it has more than 13,000. Karen has two biological daughters. When she divorced their dad in 2019, the eldest, then a college student, cut Karen out of her life. The dad had autism and a brain injury, and the older daughter felt Karen had an obligation to him. Karen, meanwhile, felt emotionally abused in the relationship. She sided with him, Karen says. 4 years later, in 2023, Karen's younger daughter, with her older sister's help, left too. The split was a heartbreaking final dissolution, leaving Karen's family whittled down to two, Karen and Dave, who is her second husband. I stopped sleeping for a month, Karen says. It was devastating. That's when she found Surrogate Grandparents USA. Karen lurked in the group for 6 months before deciding to post a message. I'd love a mother-daughter relationship, and we are hoping for grandkids, she wrote. We have a goat farm, so lots of fun for kids. She added a selfie to her Facebook post, along with a photo of her and the goats. 10 women responded. One was Michelle. Her sisters had recommended the group. Their mother had died 6 years earlier, and Michelle didn't have family nearby. Connecting was, Karen says, almost like online dating. They messaged first, before progressing to texting, calling, and finally arranging to meet up. The group's moderators encourage people to vet prospective surrogates. Michelle didn't do that, though she did browse Karen's social media. It was, needless to say, goat-heavy. They met for lunch. Michelle was eager for Karen to like her. The stakes felt high. With the holidays on the horizon, they felt the absence of their loved ones. We both cried at some point, Michelle says. Karen and Michelle bonded over their loss and their shared faith as Christians, but they didn't involve the boys until they were mutually serious about pursuing the connection. It indeed became serious. Karen's pink coffee mug, a Mother's Day gift from Michelle. After introductions, Karen, Michelle, and I suggest moving outside. Michelle says she and Dave have connected over their love of the TV show Naked and Afraid, and Karen and Dave watch the boys' soccer games. They all celebrated one of the boys' birthdays recently with a trip to a malt shop, where they split two family-sized portions of fries. I can tell there's a real relationship developing between Karen and this family. When we go back inside, Karen hands the brothers a basket of soap samples. There's watermelon this time, she says, and the 7-year-old squeals. That's the parting ritual, it seems. Michelle and her family say their goodbyes and head out. Next up, a visit to a woman named Malia and her three sons. Three of Karen's surrogate daughters have M names, Michelle, Malia, and Megan. It's become a bit of a joke between Karen and Dave. You know, it really makes me angry that you named them all starting with the letter M, he likes to say. Karen maintains a spreadsheet with the ages, birthdays, and interests of a dozen surrogate grandkids ranging in age from 1 to 13. At Malia's house, her three boys, ages 2, 4, and 7, are a cyclone of energy, showing off their rock and feather collections, playing nonsense songs on a toy guitar, plucking daisies from the yard to present to us. Malia and Karen swap church gossip over glasses of lemonade. They first met through their congregation. When a mutual friend heard about Karen's forays into the Facebook group, she encouraged Karen to reach out to Malia, whose mother had died of lung cancer. Their surrogate process was fairly seamless. Malia had known Karen's younger biological daughter and had prayed for them when the two became estranged. At the kitchen table, the conversation turns to goats and soap. This year, Karen's goats had a lot of kids, and Malia asks if she needed to wean them. "No," Karen says. "The mother goats do that themselves, kicking away their grown-up progeny when they try to nurse." The only exception was Lucy, one of the first two goats she got with her biological daughter and the mascot for Rafa Farms. "She was the best mom ever," Karen says. "The other moms would reject their kids, and Lucy would nurse her kids until they didn't want to nurse anymore." When we go to leave, Malia's boys groan and ask Karen for hugs. They wave dramatically as they hang from the play structure on the front lawn. "They're so sweet," Karen says once we're on the road. She seems filled up by the interaction. Not everyone sees this situation as Karen does. When Malia first talked to Karen about becoming a surrogate grandparent, she wanted her sister, Tanya, to be involved too. Tanya was skeptical, and she wasn't looking for a new mother. "I don't view Karen as my mom, because my mom's dead," Tanya says. "An arranged marriage is how I view it." Of course, even among those who willingly join Surrogate Grandparents USA, there are hazards. One prospective grandma from Missouri told me about 4 failed surrogate families. She'd been ghosted, hit up for money, and dumped. Another surrogate grandma had a relationship with 2 girls that got complicated after their parents split. She didn't agree with all of the parenting choices, but didn't feel as if she could say anything. The Facebook group also hasn't given its founder, Donna Scora, all she'd hoped. When I asked about the founding date of Surrogate Grandparents USA, Scora knew it off the top of her head. The group is the same age as her grandson, whom she has never met. Her son and daughter-in-law cut off contact with Scora's side of the family when he was born. Still, she thinks about her grandson daily. The Facebook group is a way to commemorate him, though every login is a reminder of her loss. Scora often sees people come to the group too fresh from the pain of estrangement or loss. "Some people are going through an emotional time, so they want an overnight fix," she says. "This is not an overnight fix." Tanya's take is that it would never be a fix. She thinks Karen and Dave are super kind, she says, but she is wary about the other side of the story. "I wish I could sit down with her daughters and be like, 'What did you see? What did you hear? What was it that broke that relationship for you to the point where you felt like there was no repairing?'" And then there's the question of what might happen if Karen's daughters come back into her life. Karen still expresses frustration and sadness about her daughters and keeps up with their whereabouts through mutual friends. Karen's daughters didn't want to speak on the record. For her part, Karen considers Tanya part of the surrogate family, patiently waiting for her to come around. Karen has just finished mixing goat's milk shampoo when Megan, the 4th surrogate daughter, arrives at the farm with her husband and their 4-year-old son, Owen. Karen wears a shirt that reads, "Promoted to Grandma." Megan's light brown hair is pulled back in a tight ponytail. She closes her eyes and takes a deep whiff. "It smells so good in here," she says. All of us move to Karen's office upstairs. It's crowded with supplies and, somehow, more bars of soap. Owen lights up when Karen offers him samples and places each bar one by one into a paper bag. When Karen and Megan met through the Facebook group in 2023, Karen was in the midst of moving to her farm. Megan offered to help her, and Dave prepped their old home for sale. Megan's husband is a contractor and didn't mind lending a hand, too. Karen and Dave took them up on it and paid them for their time. Megan and her husband even came over to the house while Karen and Dave were on vacation and painted the whole basement. Despite the way she dove headlong into Karen's life, Megan had been careful about selecting a surrogate grandparent online. She and her husband have battled substance abuse and were still adjusting to their sober lives. "Since we got clean and moved, we don't hang out with anybody," she says. "We're very particular on who we let into our lives. They were pretty much the first outsiders we've hung out with." When Megan got pregnant with Owen, she was still using. "When I gave birth, we took him home to a homeless shelter because we had nowhere to go," she says. Her biological mother didn't offer help or a place to stay. It was the end of that relationship. "After going through what I've gone through, I know that estrangement can come in many, many forms," she says, which is why she wasn't worried when she learned about Karen's biological daughters. And because Karen's ex-husband is autistic, Karen had some insights into Megan's experiences with Owen, since he is autistic too. "Pretty soon, Karen, Megan, Owen, and I head outside to meet the goats. Dave tells me how 2 years ago, Lucy, their goat mascot and best mom ever, died. They were devastated to lose one of their original goats. Lucy had been the herd's queen. The other goats relied on her to know when it was time to feed, what path to take through the pasture, when they should go into heat for breeding. After she died, the goats stood out screaming in the field as night fell. No one had told them how to get home. Without their mother, they were lost. All this time later, a queen hasn't stepped up to take Lucy's place." As we talk, a doe rams into a boy goat that has a swath of my linen pant leg in its mouth. "That doe seems to be coming into her own," I note. "Maybe she'll be the new queen," Dave says. "Only time will tell if she has what it takes and if the herd will accept her as their new mother." Several weeks after my trip to Minnesota, Karen called to say that she was in touch with her youngest daughter again. The brain cancer her daughter survived as a child had returned. Karen's voice shook. "Patients with this diagnosis tend to live 5 years, maybe less." She wanted to help her daughter through treatment, but her daughter only agreed to communicate by phone. Karen's surrogate children and grandchildren tried to be there for her. Michelle brought her coffee at the farmer's market. Malia and Tanya took her to the county fair with the kids. They felt Karen's pain, but it raised a new question. Would they lose their new relationship if Karen's real daughters reconnected with her? When Karen got the news of the diagnosis, she hired more workers for the farm so she could drop everything for her daughter. She waited for a call that never came. Her daughter stopped responding. As months passed without contact, Karen was left with an open calendar. "I guess that will free up more time for the grandkids," she told me, forcing brightness into her tone. By the fall of 2024, Karen had drifted apart from Megan. Though Megan seemed to want a real connection, Karen told me her husband drops lots of hints about wanting handouts, and that was getting old. Meanwhile, Malia and Tanya argue regularly, in the way sisters do, about the kind of family wounds that go back lifetimes. "They both have called me crying," Karen says. Malia says her mom would have fixed it, and Karen wants to. She's trying. At Thanksgiving, about a year after she first posted in Surrogate Grandparents USA, Karen posted a different kind of photo, this one to the Rapha Farms feed. In it, she gathers around a banquet table with Malia's and Michelle's families. The adults had met before, but not the kids. Everyone is dressed comfortably in sweatshirts and jeans. Malia's youngest son plays half asleep in his father's arms. Michelle's eldest son smiles and poses with his arm around Karen. They look like a family. That was Filling In for Family by Lexi Pandel. And now a second article from the Reader's Digest Nature column. Moose alert. That's no bullwinkle. We thought we were prepared for any wildlife encounter, but not this one, by Jim Garrity from the Washington Post. There are hundreds of moose, grizzly bears, and black bears in Alaska's Denali National Park. But given that the park covers 9,492 square miles, the likelihood of encountering a moose or bear is pretty low, according to the National Park Service. The sparse distribution isn't a result of hunting or disease. It just takes a lot of land to provide enough food and habitat for such massive mammals. I'm with my family on a summer vacation, taking a roughly 40-mile bus tour into Denali National Park. The scenery is spectacular, and, as our guide suggests, maybe it's just as well not to get our hopes up about seeing a moose or bear, because our visit has coincided with the time of year that those animals are typically in an aggressive mood. Apparently, the bears like to eat moose calves, and right around early June, the surviving calves become fast enough to evade the bears, leaving the bears hangry. Moose mothers, having lost a significant portion of their young, can also be bad-tempered by the time June rolls around. Moose aren't carnivorous, but they'll charge at, kick, or stomp anything they deem a threat. If you encounter a bear, you have several self-preservation options. Try to make yourself as big as possible, create a lot of noise, or play dead. With a threatening moose, the advice from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is run and get behind something solid, like a tree. Our guide says that just the week before, she and her dog encountered an agitated, massive moose. They can weigh well over 1,000 pounds, and eventually had to hide in a neighbor's greenhouse. Believe it or not, the Fish and Game Department warns that more people in the state are injured by moose than by bears each year. In Alaska, moose outnumber bears 3-1, and they injure between 5 and 10 people annually, mostly in vehicle accidents. That's more than grizzly bear and black bear attacks combined. Thankfully, most people have the good sense to keep away from bears. On the bus tour, we technically see doll sheep and a golden eagle. I say technically because to the naked eye they're specks in the far distance, although our guide has a video camera with an impressive magnifying lens. We also see a fox, but big deal. In our neighborhood in Fairfax County, Virginia, foxes are so commonplace that they snatch hot dogs off unsupervised backyard grills. My wife and two teenagers are itching to get out and experience stretches of Denali on foot, so we get off the bus. We're about two-thirds of the way up the Mount Healy Overlook Trail when my younger teenager announces he needs to relieve himself. I figure I'd better not let him get out of sight, not a matter of precognition so much as thinking it's best to keep an eye on anyone who goes off a trail in the wild. The ground is soft and spongy because of the permafrost, absorbing the sound of footsteps. And then, a few minutes after my son begins his business, I see it, about 40 feet away and moseying in our direction. A moose. Or, as some people apparently call it, a murder horse. It has no antlers, so it looks like the black stallion on a rigorous steroid regimen. We are no more than 20 feet off the trail, have been off it for barely a minute, and, despite the long odds, have just run into wildlife that absolutely dwarfs me, and I'm 6'2". I can't tell whether this is a female moose. I guess the absence of antlers means it is, and thus more likely to be dangerous at this time of year. It doesn't seem agitated or angry, but I'm not a moose psychologist. Now, before our guide's moose awareness talk, I would have been more fascinated than worried, and probably cracking bullwinkle jokes, but now I know my family and I are having a close encounter with an animal that our guide, someone who has also run into grizzly bears several times, seemed genuinely worried about. I call out to my family, my voice about one octave higher than usual. It's less primal fear than a sudden intense realization that I cannot control what happens next, and the odds of an angry moose incident are suddenly greater than zero. My son and I retreat to the trail. Our massive moose friend comes out too, and then turns down the trail, headed toward the four of us. It doesn't seem angry, but it is clearly aware, and not the least bit intimidated. My older teenager, who went through a burst of worship for adventurer Bear Grylls a few years ago, urges everyone to back away slowly and quietly. I regret to inform you that I am less than great at the slow and quiet parts. We retreat a bit more, and the moose advances a bit more. Remembering the hide behind a tree advice, we retreat into the woods. The mosquitoes are thrilled at the arrival of a four-person blood buffet. We peek out. The moose is still there, still moving slowly in our direction. Down at the visitor center, large signs had warned, "Warning, moose are extremely dangerous. Do not approach." They didn't say anything about what to do if the moose keeps following you, like the party guest you're trying to avoid. We retreat deeper into the woods, standing back to back, in case some other massive animal in the woods is approaching simultaneously. After a few minutes of the mosquitoes dining like kings, our hearts pounding and adrenaline pumping, the moose loses interest and wanders off. We return to the trail, encountering some hikers coming down the way we were headed. Excited, we say, "Did you guys see the moose?" "What moose?" "Good thing I took a photo. Otherwise, no one would believe us." That was Moose Alert by Jim Garrity. We've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.